Copyright notice. The contents of this podcast, including intro music, are copyright Phantom Femme. The podcast artwork is copyright Isabeau of WAGProductions.org. Hello all, and welcome to episode 18 of In This Labyrinth. I am, of course, your host, Phantom Femme, and wow, welcome to our very first episode of the new year and the new decade. And of course, huge thanks, as always, to everyone who's joining us, listening in, either again or especially for the first time. New listeners are always a treat and a delight, especially to start off a new year. So thank you and welcome back. And just as an aside, this is getting to be a bad habit, but sorry that this episode is once again out rather later than I had hoped it would be. I had originally intended and hoped to get this first episode of the new year out sometime in January, but, as the saying goes, life had other ideas? Now, granted, some of those ideas involved my having the chance to see Phantom three times in January, which was pretty damn awesome, so I definitely can't complain too much. But, yeah, I do regret and apologize for the delays in getting this episode out. That being said, seeing Phantom all those times has given me a lot of inspiration to work from. So I've got a lot of really exciting stuff planned for the next bunch of episodes that I hope you'll all really enjoy. In particular, I finally got software that will allow me to record long-distance interviews over Skype and FaceTime and Facebook chat and things like that, and I've been playing around with it, getting the hang of it, and yay, it does seem to be accessible, at least so far. So that's very exciting, because as I've mentioned in a lot of previous episodes, interviews are really something I want to do more of on this show. And in fact, I have a couple of really exciting author interviews planned for some time in the next bunch of episodes. They're not absolutely nailed down yet, because the authors and I still have to coordinate times and schedules and technologies and all that. But I have talked to both authors about it, and they're both very excited and enthusiastic about coming on the show. So that's definitely something to look forward to in the near future. I'm really excited about it. And I'm also, as well as doing the interviews with them, I very much hope, I'm also going to be reviewing their books in upcoming episodes. So stay tuned for that as well. They're very interesting books that I'm really looking forward to reading and to talking about on the show, because they're both definitely books that will be of strong interest to Phantom fans. As well as that, I've also started sharing some podcast bonus content on my Patreon as a kind of special treat for supporters there. So feel free to, by all means, check that out as well. I've got some of my writing up of some old blog posts from a now discontinued blog that I used to do, but those posts were really where I developed the thinking that ultimately became episode 4, my episode on the Jerick. And there'll be more of that coming soon. Plus, I've also put up what might be called a guided tour of the title song from Phantom, because you'll recall back in episode 5, I talked about various elements of the song, of the accompaniment, the orchestration, the poetry of the lyrics, etc., that make that song and that scene so awesome in ways that are, I feel like, often overlooked even by fans. Well, for some extra podcast bonus content for my Patreon supporters, I basically put on a recording of the title song and recorded myself talking through it, pointing out some of those elements that I was talking about back in that episode, so that hopefully listeners can actually hear them in the music as I point them out. And that's something I'm going to do more of, too. I plan on doing more of those title song talk-throughs and putting them up on my Patreon as well, because I definitely wasn't able to point out all the elements that I talked about back in episode 5 in just one listening through of the song. So for this one, the one I just put up, I focused really on how the accompaniment uses rhythm, how it uses polyrhythm, rhythmic layering, to musically represent the complexities of the Phantom-Christine relationship. And then for future ones, I'm going to use different recordings of the song for variety and focus on other things like the lyrics and the staging. So keep an eye out for those, as well as more of my writing, on my Patreon, and I hope that's something you'll all enjoy. And both the writing and the title song talk-throughs are available at the lowest support tier, which is only $1 a month. They're available at the higher ones as well, but in case that's prohibitive, yeah, they are available at the lowest possible support level. Because although my dream in life would be to be able to support myself doing this work, I also want to keep it as financially accessible as possible, because I know how that is. And of course, you can find all that stuff at http://www.patreon.com/phantomfem. That's PHANTOMFEMME. And, oh yeah, plus, I've got a new Instagram up for the podcast. Like, there's my own personal Instagram, which is PhantomFem, but I've also now created an Instagram for this podcast, which you can follow at In This Labyrinth Podcast. And there's not much there yet, because I only just got it up and going this week, but hopefully there will be. So now you can connect with the show there, too, as well as in all the usual places that I'll list off at the end of the episode. So, as I mentioned a bit earlier, I had the sheer privilege and delight of going to Phantom 3 times last month, back in January, and 2 of those were to hear a really interesting in-concert production of Phantom out in Montreal. And so I thought, for this first episode of the new year, I'd do a bit of a review of that in-concert production that I saw there, both because it was really interesting and really awesome and really great, and also to start off the new year with something kind of lighter and a bit more fun than some of the maybe heavier stuff that I've been talking about in previous episodes lately. So, as I said, this was an in-concert production, so sadly it wasn't a full staging of Phantom. That would have been awesome, and when they bring this back, I hope they do bring this back, when they do, I really hope they do bring it back as a full production, because that would really be awesome. Like, in the words of a friend of mine, this is a thing that really needs to happen. But what I went to back in January was a concert production more along the lines of the Les Miserables 10th anniversary concert, for those of you who've seen that, rather than the Phantom 25, the Phantom 25th anniversary concert. So it was the full show, like it was the full libretto and the full music. They didn't abridge it or cut anything, thank goodness. And the performers were in costume, they did use some props, and there was some staging. But as I understand it, the staging and the choreography was pretty minimal. And while there was lighting design used to differentiate the scenes and to convey the mood of the different scenes, at least as I understand it, there was lighting design used for that. There were no sets. There was no set design used. Though, that said, they did use some of the firework effect, which was cool, although they didn't use as much of them as I would have liked. So, like, during the confrontation between the Phantom and Raoul in the graveyard in Act 2, for example, they did have some, like, small shoots of flame coming up out of the stage instead of the Phantom shooting fireballs at Raoul. But they didn't have the part where the whole stage bursts into flames, which was a pity. That's always been one of my favorite parts. Don't ask, just don't ask. And I can't remember if they had the big explosion puff of smoke thing at the end of Masquerade when the Phantom disappears, but they definitely didn't, alas, have the giant flash at the beginning of the overture. I was so sorry they didn't. I missed that, too. They did, though, have the chandelier, which was super awesome. And it did make a sort of exploding, crashing noise. I don't know whether you saw any exploding, crashing, whatever, but it definitely made an exploding, crashing noise at the end of Act 1 when the chandelier falls, which was cool. And they did, to my and the rest of the audience's great delight, do the traditional thing where at the end of the auction, the auctioneer whips the cloth off the chandelier and it slowly rises, glowing off the stage during the first half of the overture to where it hangs over the stalls. So that was truly awesome. I was so glad they did that. I've missed that. That was always one of my favorite parts of the show and one of the moments in the traditional Phantom that I always find the most truly awe-inspiring. So, yeah, I was so glad they did that. As for the rest of the production, as I said, I really hope that they bring it back, and preferably that they bring it back as a full, fully staged production. Because even from this just concert version, you could kind of get the sense of what it would be like as a full production. And yeah, it would be pretty damn spectacular. Now, I'll admit I did have some issues with some of their interpretive choices, but they were mostly technical issues that I assume, or hope, would be caught and fixed in a full production with a good director and music director. I definitely did not have any of the kind of major structural, oh my god, this affects the storytelling in a bad way, kind of concerns that I have about, say, the Jerick, the 2004 film, that is, or the Lawrence Connor production. This really had and maintained the feel of a traditional production, which was wonderful. Oh yeah, and I forgot to mention, it was at Théâtre Saint-Denis in Montreal, and I'll put all the info about it in the blog post for this episode. Though, heads up, a bunch of that information is in French. But I figure I'll go ahead and include it because I assume there may well be some of you out there who can read it. So what was cool about this Montreal in concert production, and one of the big reasons that I made the effort to go out there to see it, is that it was done in French. And indeed, it was billed and advertised as Phantom's French language debut. Now, as some of you may know, there was supposed to be a production in Paris, France back in 2016, which would have been Phantom, the first French language production of Phantom at the Théâtre Mogador, but that got scuttled by a bad fire. And decades ago, way back in, I believe, the early 90s it was, there was an unusually short-lived for Phantom Belgian production, but I don't know whether that was in French or in Flemish. Does anyone out there know? But other than that, yeah, because the Paris production back in 2016 got canceled, this in-concert version in Montreal is the first time that the full score and libretto of Phantom has been done in French that I know of. I mean, apart from the French dubs on the Canadian and French DVDs of the 2004 film. So perhaps I should have said rather that this was the first time the full stage version libretto and score have been done in French. Which is kind of weird and ironic when you think about it, given that Phantom is originally based on a French novel, and yet it's taken 32 odd years for the stage version of the ALW to finally be performed in Phantom's original language. So, needless to say, this was really historic and really cool. And, as I said, that was a major reason why I made the endeavor to go out to Montreal and see it, hear it, and also because I was really interested to hear the translation, how they would render the libretto in French. Now, I have to admit, my French is more conversational than fluent. Plus, especially with certain kinds of voices, I tend to find it hard to understand people. I tend to lose comprehension significantly when people are singing up in higher registers, especially if they have a lot of vibrato that I find kind of obscures consonants and makes it hard to understand, even in English. But those issues notwithstanding, I'd say I understood between 50 and 75% of it, which is pretty respectable. And from that, I have to say I was pretty impressed with the job they did translating the libretto. From everything I could tell, it stayed very close to the original English, translated quite literally whenever possible, while still, of course, fitting the music and trying to keep the sense of the poetry, like the rhyme scheme and all that. And even where it wasn't possible to translate literally and still fit the music and such, they really tried to keep the sense of what was in the original English libretto. There were a few spots where the translation added meanings that aren't there in the original English, but I thought they worked. So, for example, in Angel of Music, the line, "Angel of Music, hide no longer," this is Act 1, Scenes 2 and 3, so the duet with Meg and the mirror, they rendered the line, "Ange de la musique, n'ayez pas peur." So, "Angel of Music, have no fear," or "Angel of Music, don't be afraid," which is kind of cool given the reason the Phantom's teaching her from hiding, that he is in fact afraid of revealing himself to her. So I thought that was a really cool bit of added layering of meaning that got added in translation. And then in the second note scene, Act 2, Scene 3, in Raoul's lines surrounding Twisted Every Way, where he says, quote, "You said yourself he was nothing but a man, but while he lives, he will haunt us till we're dead," unquote. And then after Twisted Every Way, the, quote, "Christine, Christine, don't think that I don't care, but every hope and every prayer rests on you now," unquote. Those lines are more general. It seems to me he's speaking more generally of how Christine holds the key to catching the common enemy, the presumed common enemy of everyone in that room. But in the translation the Montreal production used, he's speaking much more specifically of and directly to his, Raoul's, and Christine's relationship. Because they have him saying, and I'm paraphrasing, but basically, "As long as the Phantom lives, our love is impossible. You hold every hope and every prayer for our, Raoul's and Christine's, freedom." And sorry, I'm paraphrasing because I can't remember the exact wording by now, because it's been almost 2 weeks. But the sense of it was very much a much more specific appeal to and pressure on Christine to catch the Phantom so that she and Raoul can go off and have a relationship. And interestingly, now that I think about it, it kind of foreshadows her ultimate choice that she has to make in the final lair in Act 2, Scene 9. So that's another instance where there are some interesting layers of connotation added that aren't there in the original English libretto, but which, to me at least, work really well and are actually kind of cool. The other thing I thought they did a really awesome job on was translating the humor, the jokes, especially in Act 1, Scene 8 and Act 2, Scene 3, the two note scenes. But really everywhere where there was humor in the show, I thought they did a really great job translating it. And that's really an impressive and worthy achievement, because humor can often be very difficult to translate. It can be very language-specific because of the way it relies on wordplay and double meaning and sometimes even alliteration. And so that can be very hard to render across languages and have it still have the same punchline, or have the punchline still make sense, especially when you have the added restrictions of having to translate it in such a way that the words still fit the music, the rhythm structure, and preserve the rhyme scheme. But I thought they managed all of that really well, and all the humor scenes were just as funny in French as in the original English, and sometimes even slightly funnier, because the way they translated in order to make the French words fit the music sometimes made the phrasing even blunter than in English. So that made for some delightfully hilarious moments. Again, as I said, especially in the note scenes. So, in addition to the translation itself, I thought there were a bunch of other things this production did really fantastically. First of all, even though it was a concert production and wasn't fully staged, it was fully acted, so everyone on the stage was in character, acting their roles, not just singing the music. And it was really well acted, too. There was a bit of over-the-topness and camp that, yes, I would have liked to have reined in. Ahem, Act 2, Scene 4, I'm looking at you. But overall, I thought everyone did a really good job of being solidly in character and giving all the scenes the feel that they should have. The one exception to that, unfortunately, was the Christine, who, especially the second time I saw it, I sometimes felt like had slipped out of character and was just singing. But there were other times when I really liked what she did dramatically. And the Phantom actually took quite a while to win me over, mostly because of his voice and other musical issues that I'll get to in a moment. But he did eventually win me over completely, because although I didn't dig his interpretation of the character in all scenes, I thought he absolutely nailed the really key emotional scenes of the show. So Act 1, Scene 6, Stranger Than You Dreamt It, The First Unmasking, Act 1, Scene 10, The Rooftop Reprise, and of course, The Final Lair, Act 2, Scene 9. I thought he really knocked those out of the park, emotionally and dramatically. Also, honorable mention really has to go to Carlotta. She was hilarious. She was 100% in character, which was what made the whole thing work. And all I can say is, for those of you who've seen the 2004 film and seen Minnie Driver's rather over-the-top portrayal of Carlotta in that, this woman's Carlotta made Minnie Driver's look positively tame. She was that kind of over-the-top, except dialed up about 10 times. Which shouldn't have worked, but did. It was hysterically funny. And she had this very big, powerful operatic voice. I mean, she obviously was a fully trained opera singer, so she had this very big, powerful operatic voice with a big vibrato. And she played up to the nth degree just about every opera singer stereotype you've ever heard of. Like her opening cadenza in Act 1 in the Hannibal scene, and her Carlotta's version of Think of Me, were things you truly had to hear to believe, especially the cadenza. Oh my god. Like, every classically trained singer in the audience must have been either laughing, cringing, or both. Piangi kind of tried to do the same thing, but somehow it wasn't quite as effective and quite as funny as Carlotta's. For those of you who've seen the 1990 miniseries with Charles Dance, her singing was a little bit like the Carlotta in that. But, like, with the opera diva stereotype parody played up, like, 10 times more so. As I said, it was hilarious. Another thing I thought they did really well was the pacing of the show. They took the whole thing at quite a stately pace, like the whole show, intermission included, took a full 2 hours and 40 minutes. And in fact, certain passages and sections were taken quite ponderously slowly. But personally, I found I liked it. I found it worked. It didn't feel to me like it dragged at all. If anything, it was quite refreshing after so many times, not this last time, but so many times before that, of seeing the Lawrence Connor production, where especially Act 1 has felt very rushed. So it was really nice to hear the show taken at a nice, stately pace and given lots of room to breathe. The other thing that was really neat was that this was the most operatic rendition of the Lloyd Webber Phantom that I think I've ever heard. And for the most part, I found I really liked that because that gave it a very full, very rich, very lush, very full-bodied sound. And it made the ensemble numbers a real feast for the ears. It also made it really believable that this story was taking place in an opera house. Like, you believed the ensemble as an opera company, and you really believed Carlotta and Christine as rival opera singers. as I mentioned before, Carlotta had a very big, very operatic voice, and so did Christine. She had almost as big an operatic voice as Carlotta. So it was very easy to imagine those voices singing actual classical repertoire, which, I hate to say it, but is not always the case in Phantom. Often, Christine, Carlotta, the ensemble, they're very good voices, but they're still very music theater voices, and so you have to kind of suspend your disbelief a bit to imagine them as singers in a classical opera company. But that definitely was not an issue in this production. So those were all the things that I thought were really awesome about the Montreal concert production. But as I said, I did have some issues with it as well. My biggest issues with it were that it wasn't recorded, or at least if it was recorded, that hasn't been released yet. So there was no soundtrack or DVD available, which I was really disappointed about because I was really looking forward to getting the soundtrack and nerding out on it and using it and hopefully its liner notes to really dig deeper into the translation, too. So I was rather bummed out that there wasn't a soundtrack or DVD available. And then also, there was no merch. Like, there was no souvenir counter with any of the usual mugs and t-shirts and souvenir programs and keychains, etc., that there usually is at Phantom. And so that kind of left me wondering what the heck the powers that be were thinking, because that struck me as an incredible oversight. And a bummer, because, again, I was looking forward to coming home with a bunch of new souvenirs from that. So that was kind of like, what the heck? Then, in terms of the performance itself, I think my biggest issue with it was the volume and the dynamics. Like, I think I would have liked the overall volume of the performance taken down a notch or two, because it seemed very loud. And then musically, I would have liked a bigger contrast between loud and soft. Like, they had the loud end covered very well, but then it seemed to me that the singing and playing never really went below a mezzo piano, so moderately soft at most, and mostly tended to stay in the mezzo forte to fortissimo, so moderately loud to extremely loud, range. And I think that lack of contrast between loud and super soft contributed to the overall sense of loudness. And there are certain parts of Phantom that, to be at their most effective, really do need to drop right down to a piano or even pianissimo, so soft or really soft. I'm thinking in particular of certain parts of Music of the Night, certain parts of the rooftop scene, Act 1, Scene 10, of course the Seething Shadows, Breathing Lies stanza of Masquerade, most of the graveyard scene and the transition to it, so Christine's little reprise of the first four lines of the title song, and then the first halves of both Wishing You Were Somehow Here Again and Wandering Child, and then, of course, the very ending of the show, the final phrase of the last Music of the Night reprise at the end of the final lair, Act 2, Scene 9, and the last five chords. All those parts, to my mind, really need to be done very softly and sweetly and be allowed to shimmer, and they're traditionally done that way. But yeah, all those passages I felt were done too loud in this production. As I said, They did go down to maybe a mezzo piano, a moderately soft, maybe. But yeah, I would have liked to have heard them done much more softly and much more gently. And while we're on the subject of loudness, what musicians call dynamics, I must take an aside here to talk about the title song. Because although it was particularly noticeable in this production because of, as I said, the general issues with loudness, I've noticed in a lot of productions, and I don't know where the trend started, but it's really become a thing to really crank the title song, to really amp up the volume on the title song much higher than the surrounding music. And it also seems to have become a thing, and again, I don't know where or how this got started. Maybe it got borrowed from the Jerick or from the Vegas production, I'm not sure. But in any case, it also seems to have become a thing to add in this wailing, I'm almost tempted to say screeching, electric guitar part. Especially to the fourth verse and the high vocalization part of the title song. And don't get me wrong, I love a good electric guitar as much as anybody. But when it comes to the title song from Phantom, especially when in the actual context of the show, at the risk of sounding like a total stick-in-the-mud traditionalist, I really wish productions wouldn't do that. And I mean both things. I really wish they wouldn't amp up the volume so much, and I also wish they wouldn't add in the electric guitar part. And it's not because it makes it especially loud for the audience, that I don't mind. But I find it really limits what the singers, what the actors can do dramatically in that song. Because they're having to work so hard to project over the accompaniment. There's no room for finesse. There's no room for dramatic inflection of the lyrics, especially for the Phantom, because he's singing so high in his range and having to work so hard to project over the accompaniment the whole time. But it's also true for Christine as well, especially as she moves into her upper register. And in particular, when she gets to, after the fourth verse, the high vocalizations part, with the orchestra that amped up and the electric guitar wailing away, there's kind of nothing for her to do but just project it out at full volume fortissimo in order to carry over the orchestra. Which, I must say, the Christine in the Montreal concert production did quite admirably. Wow! Nevertheless, it doesn't leave the actress singing Christine any room to kind of play around dramatically with those high vocalizations. It doesn't leave her any room to vary the dynamics, the volume of her singing, the inflection for dramatic effect. And that strikes me as a real pity, because as I've talked about before on this show, there is so much that can be done with that scene dramatically, but the actors need the dynamic room to do it and not be having to just worry about sheerly projecting over the orchestra. And if you listen to early productions of the show from the 80s and 90s, they don't do that. There's no electric guitar part in the orchestration. And the volume of the title song isn't amped up nearly as much, if at all, from the surrounding music. Anyway, pardon the extended digression, but that's an issue I've been thinking about for a while because, as I said, I've noticed it before in other productions. Phantom 25th Anniversary Concert, I'm Looking at You. Although that's certainly by no means the only production I've noticed it in. But it was particularly noticeable in this Montreal concert production. And in fact, between the loudness of the accompaniment and their loudness having to project over it, it actually made it hard to understand what they were saying during a lot of the song. I don't know if anyone else found that, but I definitely did. So, yeah, if this comes back, especially as a full production, that's something I'd really like to see them dial back, and I'd love to see other productions dial that back too. So, continuing on the theme of volume and musicality, I have to say that although, as I said, I liked a lot of what The Phantom and Christine did dramatically, especially in the really key, important emotional scenes, personally, I would have cast for different voices. As I said, this was perhaps the most operatic rendition of Phantom I've ever heard, and that included, as I mentioned, Christine and also the Phantom having very big, very powerful operatic voices. And personally, I would have opted for a little less sheer power in the voices in favor of a bit more warmth and sweetness. Like, I would have still gone for operatic voices, just, as I said, slightly smaller, sweeter ones, rather than quite so sheerly big and powerful. And while we're on the subject of voices and volume, Carlotta, as I mentioned earlier, I really loved everything she did with her sung parts. But her spoken lines were 99% delivered screamed. And I really do mean screamed. Almost like a really screamy version of those, like, extreme guttural vocals that you hear in some kinds of metal. I'm not kidding. That's how Carlotta delivered, like, 99% of her spoken lines. And again, it was really effective in some places. But every spoken line? And again, it meant that her parts were sort of unremittingly loud with no relief, but also it frequently made it hard to understand what she was saying. And I should say, Rayet, the opera house rehearsal leader director character, had the same problem. All his lines were delivered at a yell, too. I guess that's how they interpreted when Lefebvre calls him a tyrant. But again, I would much rather they have saved that for occasional dramatic effect rather than having him deliver every line that way. Again, I found that was a bit much. Also, in the way that Carlotta and Rayet yelled their spoken lines, in the way that Piangi was portrayed, and especially in Act 2, Scene 4, the Don Juan Triumphant rehearsal scene, it seemed to me that they were crossing over into the territory of camp. And while some camp works for Carlotta and Piangi, sure, because they're often the comic relief, that needs to be handled very carefully. Like, I'm glad the managers avoided camp, but having the Don Juan Triumphant rehearsal scene played campy was, like, what the heck? That's supposed to be a scene with a great deal of tension in it leading into the graveyard scene, and it just wasn't there. It was played way too much for laughs and yucks. And honestly, there was even one moment when it seemed like Christine was crossing over into some camp, because in Act 2, Scene 3, the second note scene, when they're all singing at once and all of a sudden Christine breaks through it by yelling, "I'll go mad!" Well, both times I heard it, the Christine did it in this kind of operatic, not very real-sounding way, and the audience laughed both times. And I thought, what the heck, this is not supposed to be a humorous moment. Like, yes, there's humor earlier in the scene, but we've left that behind and gotten serious now. So, if they bring it back, and especially if they bring it back as a full production, I really hope they do so with a good director who'll know not to do that, who'll know to use camp very sparingly, if at all. Because, sure, some camp is appropriate in the Hannibal and Il Muto scenes because they're meant to be parodies of opera, but it needs to be handled very delicately, and certainly nowhere else in the show is camp appropriate. Humor, sure, because there's a lot of great situational humor in Phantom, especially in the manager scenes, but not camp. Now, thankfully, that was only a problem in the scenes that I mentioned, and the really important emotional scenes were played just as seriously as they should be. But still, that's something I'd like to see reined in by a good director if this is brought back, and as I said, especially if it's brought back as a full production. And lastly, the other thing that I would want to see a good director address if this were brought back is that although, as I said, I really loved the way the Phantom did the key scenes, Act 1, Scene 6, The Unmasking, Act 1, Scene 10, The Rooftop, and, of course, The Final Lair, I wasn't satisfied with the way he did the other scenes. So, for instance, in the title song and music of the night, I didn't get from the Phantom the warm, charismatic seduction that you need from him in those scenes. I got very great, very powerful operatic singing, but not warm, charismatic seduction. Now, to be fair, maybe people who could see his body language and such were getting that out of his performance in those scenes, but I have to say that just from his voice, just from his vocal rendition, I was not. And same with Point of No Return. In addition, in the note scenes, Act 1 Scene 8 and Act 2 Scene 3, in Act 2 Scene 1 at the end of Masquerade when he appears there, and in Il Muto, Act 1 Scene 9, he tended to deliver his lines in all those scenes angry, when in fact what's called for is sarcasm. Like, in the note scenes, there's a wonderful, snarky, biting sarcasm to the Phantom's lines in those scenes. And in Il Muto, his lines are menacing, yes, but sarcastically menacing. And I found the Phantom in this production missed that aspect of snark and sarcasm altogether. Though, to be fair, he's far from the only Phantom I've heard have that problem. But again, it's something I'm hoping a good choice of director will fix if they bring it back. Or when they bring it back. Because, as I said back at the beginning, I really hope they do, and I really hope they bring it back as a full production. Because, in spite of my criticisms, which, as I said, were mostly technical stuff, it really was a wonderful, lush, sumptuous production, and it would be even more awesome fully staged. Like, as a friend of mine says, this is a thing that really needs to happen. So, I hope you've enjoyed my little review of this production of the Le Fantôme de l'Opéra in concert. I certainly enjoyed seeing, well, hearing the show, and it's been really fun to talk about it and dissect it here, so I hope you all have enjoyed that too. And as I mentioned back at the beginning, I'll put information about the production in the show notes for this episode, so you all can go check it out if you want. Heads up, as before, that a lot of the information is in French, but if worse comes to worse, that's what Google Translate is there for. Oh, and on that note, one other thing I would want to see them do differently next time if they bring this back, either as a concert or as a full production, is that there were no English surtitles. So you either had to understand French very well and or be very familiar with Phantom in order to follow, which might be kind of daunting for Phantom newbies. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in as a final thought on the show. Anyway, as I said, I do hope you all have enjoyed my review of the Montreal Phantom in concert, and I'll put all the info about it in the show notes for this episode. Oh, and speaking of show notes, the ones for last episode, episode 17, where I reviewed When All Is Lost, those are finally up now too. So if you want to check out that fanfic, check out some of the author's other works, which I highly, highly recommend. Yeah, the blog post for the previous episode is finally up with the URLs for all of that. As for upcoming episodes, as I mentioned before, I'm working on some really awesome book reviews, some reviews of some really awesome Phantom-related books that have fallen into my lap recently, and I'm really excited about and really hoping to set up interviews with the authors of both of those books sometime over the next few months. But that all is going to take some time to set up. First of all, I have to finish reading the books so I can give them good, proper reviews, and then it's probably going to take some time of playing email, message, or Twitter tag to set up times with the authors when we can actually sit down over Skype or Zoom or whatever and do interviews. Nevertheless, as I said, I'm hoping to have that arranged for some time within the next few months. So some stuff definitely to look forward to there. In the meantime, for next episode, because it's now March, yikes, and March 8th is International Women's Day, I want to talk about violence and gendered violence in Phantom. Don't worry, it won't be anything, like, disturbing or explicit or anything. But I've been seeing some really interesting discussions come up on various blogs and internet groups about whether Phantom glorifies or romanticizes violence in general and violence against women in particular. So for next episode, yeah, I want to explore some of those discussions and weigh in on that. So I hope you'll all find that interesting and thought-provoking. In the meantime, you can get in touch with the show in all the usual ways. You can tweet at the show at ITL Podcast, and of course, you can follow the show at ITL Podcast on Twitter as well. You can like or follow and or follow the Facebook page for the show, which is In This Labyrinth, The Phantom of the Opera in Eric's Times and Hours. And or you can join the Facebook group for the show, which is the same thing, the full title of the podcast. And searching In This Labyrinth on Facebook should bring up both of them. You can also leave a comment on the episode page on the podcast website, which of course is https://inthislabyrinth.fireside.fm. And of course, you can send an old-fashioned email to inthislabyrinth@yahoo.com. And last but not least, of course, you can leave a rating and review on iTunes and I think on Google Play as well. And if you enjoy the show, it would be really awesome if folks would leave ratings and reviews there, because that will help boost the show in their search algorithm thingies and make the show more accessible for new people to find, which would, of course, be wonderful. So, once again, I hope you've all really enjoyed this episode as much as I've enjoyed doing it. And really sorry it took so damn long to get this episode up. Yikes. Since the Christmas holidays, it's been really hard to find time and energy to record. But, again, really sorry about that, and hopefully things will be back to being more regular now. And hopefully you'll all join me again for next episode, which I hope you're looking forward to as much as I'm looking forward to doing it. So I hope everybody had a great holiday, a great Christmas, a great New Year. I hope everyone's 2020 is getting off to a great or at least a reasonable start. And of course, happy belated Valentine's Day to everyone out there. I hope everyone was able to show themselves, because that's totally a valid thing, or their significant other slash others some nice phantom love. And of course, have a great, fun, safe, and phantom-filled time until next episode. Disclaimer. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the presenters and do not reflect the views of the host, Andrew Lloyd Webber, Cameron McIntosh, the Really Useful Group, or any other person or entity. In addition, this podcast is not in any way affiliated with Andrew Lloyd Webber, the Really Useful Group, Cameron McIntosh, or with any other person or entity involved in the production of any version of Phantom.